You can deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there.
I want to believe.
Hi, this is David Duchovny, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
At some point in our lives, we experience pain. Living with physical or emotional pain is part of the journey of being human. And when pain refuses to go away, we strive to reduce it or move through our lives despite the pain. Most of us are looking for one button to push, the one pill to take, or a single change to make in our lives. The truth is that it's not easy when pain has taken up residence in our lives. There's no one-size-fits-all solution, no single key, no quick fix. Our guest today has lived with pain for over a long period of time, and she can attest to the fact that when we create a new relationship with our bodies, our emotions, our minds, and our spirits, our healing can truly unfold. Join us as we explore this deeply transformative path with our guest, Sarah Ann Shockley. Sarah Ann Shockley is an award-winning filmmaker and neuro-linguistic programming practitioner. She has studied with shamans from various cultures around the world and has lived with the debilitating thoracic outlet syndrome for more than 10 years. She has been a columnist for Pain News Network and is a regular contributor to The Mighty, a 1.5 million member online community for those living with chronic illness. Because her condition was unresponsive to existing traditional or alternative therapies, she developed a unique method of pain management and pain reduction, not reliant on pharmaceuticals or medical intervention. She's the author of The Pain Companion, Everyday Wisdom for Living With and Moving Beyond Chronic Pain. Dr. Bernie Siegel has contributed a foreword to her book. Join us for the next hour as we explore transforming our relationship with pain with our guest, Sarah Ann Shockley. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Sarah, welcome.
Thank you so much, Justine. I'm delighted to be here.
It's a delight to have you on this most important subject that touches so many of our lives. Yes. I would love for you to share a bit of your story, how you decided to write this book because of your own pain syndrome. So describe that to us, please.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. In the fall of 2007, I contracted the condition you mentioned earlier, thoracic outlet syndrome. And it's not that well known, although it's becoming fairly prevalent. I contracted it from computer use. I'm almost 6 feet tall, and I was working with not just a laptop keyboard, but a mini laptop. So every time I was working at my job, I was collapsing the top part of my body unwittingly. And that over after a period of a couple of years, the collapse became permanent. And so what that means is there's a space between the clavicles, the collarbones, and the first rib. And through that space, a large muscle from the neck, the scalene muscle, and large nerve ganglia, a major artery, and some veins have to fit. And it's an already pretty narrow space, a lot going on in there. So when that collapses, all of those things are effectively are squeezed and compressed. It's incredibly painful. It's very debilitating. It's it reduces the ability to use your arms and hands. It creates not just tingling and numbing pain, but shooting pains, aches, a lot of burning. The nerve pain can be really tremendous. And my neck became almost immobile. I could barely try. I had to turn my whole body to kind of move my head. And difficult to close the hands or use the hands at all. And it came on virtually overnight. I'm sure it was coming on for a long time, but the awareness of it and the pain from it came on very quickly. And so I had to stop working. I was a single mom at the time. My son was 11. And I had to stop basically everything. So it was incredibly, it was a shock. It was like overnight from being very active. I was the kind of person that did a lot. You know, I was active athletically, but also the kind of person that gets things done, you know. And a lot of us are like that. And as a single mom, I had to be too, the one who took care of things and made sure things happened. And overnight, I went from being very capable and resourceful and the provider to not being able to work, barely able to move, with a young person to take care of. And like many people, I thought it would just go away because even though it was horrible and debilitating and very, very intensely painful, everything heals, doesn't it? You know, everything we meet gets better,
it's
right?
It's our assumption.
That
yes.
was my experience in life. You sprain your ankle, it gets better. You have the flu, you get over it. So I'd never experienced anything like this before where it didn't go away. So the first, almost the whole first year, I was very incapacitated, but I was in the belief that it was going to lift and get better. And I did everything I was supposed to do, you know, be very quiet. I was told by the thoracic surgeon that I went to see to keep my hands next to my waist. Well, you know, what can you do with your hands next to your waist? Not a whole lot. So every time you're doing anything with this condition, you're actually making it worse because every time you use your arms, that area on the top of your body that's already compressed compresses more, and then the tissues swell more, and then the nerves get more inflamed. So it's this incredible catch-22 where you're stuck in this place that you can't really get out of because there's no physical manipulations that help it. I also tried, I'm not big on using medications anyway, but I did try them. It was part of my disability process to show that I was wanting to heal and being a compliant patient and all that stuff. So I did try several nerve medications, and I'll never forget the day we went to pick one up. My son was in the car with me, and he was just amazing help through all this. He helped me with so many things, and he came with me everywhere to do the shopping and the laundry because he had to do most of these mm-hmm. things. So we went to pick up this prescription, and I remember opening up the box, and this list fell out, and it was like this long sort of Jacob's ladder accordion, you know, thing that went all the way to the floor of the car with tiny, tiny writing on it. And Connor took that from me and said, "What's this?" And he said, "Mom, this is the list of possible side effects." It went on and on and on and on. And on. And one of them was sudden death. And he was a little alarmed, like, "You're not really going to take that." Well, I kind of have to. I took it for a week. But the side effects were not livable. You know, then it just, nerve pain's very difficult to deal with. So it kind of put the pain at a little bit of a distance, but brought on, my insomnia was much worse. I was nauseated. I was really fogged out and dizzy, which you can't be if you've got a kid that you have to drive around. And so I quickly put away the idea of using medications. And for this condition, there's very little that can be done physically either. Now, some people have a much lighter version than I did, so they can do some physical therapy and it does help them and they do come through it. And some people do have surgery. And I mentioned I went to a thoracic outlet surgeon.
I read that and I thought, oh my gosh, that was so drastic what they were saying.
What they do is they remove the first rib.
Did they?
No. I'm not big on surgery either. So they were going to remove the first rib on both sides.
Yeah,
on both sides it would have been for me. And luckily I had a really wonderful, sane surgeon. He's one of the best in San Francisco. And he spent 2 hours with me explaining the physiology of my condition and explaining to me why I was not a good candidate for this surgery. He said to me, don't do this. And I said, good, because I really didn't want to. This wasn't the direction I wanted to go in.
Didn't they even say if they did that, it might come back anyway?
Yes, that's exactly what he said. He said, "For you, in your case, it's probably not going to help. It'll come back. It's a terribly long recovery process for something as drastic as that." And then he said, "You're probably just going to have it again." And I was so grateful that he was honest about that. Mm-hmm. So for some people, there are ways to work with thoracic outlet syndrome. For me, I had it. Most people have it on one side of their body only. I had it on both sides. Most people find that it affects more their muscles or more their nerves or more their arteries. I had on all three levels. The super duper deluxe version of this.
Yeah.
And now I look back and think, well, I don't know how that happened, but it did force me inward. It forced me to find other ways of dealing with pain. Again, I wasn't somebody that was going to go to medication anyway, but there was nothing there, even on the alternative end of things, that was going to touch nerve pain. There wasn't really anything to do in terms of physical therapy. Most of the people I went to unwittingly made it worse because they weren't used to my severity of my case. So,
Sarah, I mean, would that cause like just complete despair? Like, okay, I am really like screwed here.
Yeah.
This is like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. It took me about a year to really get it that this wasn't going away because I was in the mode of, I'll just do the right things. I'll eat right. The only exercise I could do was walking. So I would use walking as my physical therapy. So I was doing all the right things. So of course it was going to go away, but it didn't. And after about almost the first full year, one of my doctors said to me, you know, Sarah, this is a condition that's progressive. It gets worse. It's not going to get better. And I went, ugh. And my other doctor basically said the same thing. You know, you're going to have this for the rest of your life. And some people who have it this severely, their arms atrophy. The arms stop working at all. Some people get strokes that have it as badly as I had it. So, yeah, there was a point after about the first year where I was hit with that news and fell into definitely despair, depression, hopelessness. So yes, you do fall into despair and you do fall into hopelessness and helplessness. There's a response that we often have to pain when we first go into pain, and that is to fight it. That's mm-hmm. the first thing we usually do is we just, you know, let's get rid of this. That's the first thing. We go into battle mode. And with this condition, I did try to, you know, do everything I could to heal it.
Well, okay, let's
go back.
We're going to get to the healing now. So I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Sarah Ann Shockley, and she is the author of The Pain Companion, Everyday Wisdom for Living With and Moving Beyond Chronic Pain. And if you want to know about her work, you can go to her website, sarahannshockley.com, and she spells her name S-A-R-A-H, Sarah, A-N-N-E, Shockley, S-H-O-C-K-L-E-Y, sarahannshockley.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. here with Sarah Ann Shockley, and she's the author of The Pain Companion, Everyday Wisdom for Living With and Moving Beyond Chronic Pain. And Sarah, in your story, allopathic medicine wasn't really that helpful at this point. Pharmaceuticals weren't doing it. The treatments weren't doing it. So where did you go then? What made you go into some other form that was helpful?
Well, as I was saying before the break, I tried, you know, sometimes often our first response is to be angry or to fight pain. And that didn't work with my condition at all because any kind of stress, that the pain goes through the roof, any kind of tension in the body. So having any kind of feeling of I'm going to get through this, okay, adds tension to the body. And I just couldn't handle that. So I moved away from the fight response and I went into, okay, after the news that I was going to be living with it probably for the rest of my life, I thought, okay, these are the cards I've been dealt. I'll just live with it. And I went into stoic mode. Now, I'm from New England. We do stoicism really well. So you don't show your pain. You don't, you know, you try not to feel it too much. You don't talk about it and you just get through it. So I spent years, literally years, in the mode of just living with it. And I had a kid to take care of and I had to just try to do the best I could.
So did you isolate yourself then? I mean, did your relationships and your friendships kind of suffer? You didn't participate? Did you feel any shame or did you go into anger or blame or any of that?
All of that, yeah. Because, yes, it's a natural inclination, and it's almost impossible not to be isolated for a while, especially if your pain is very acute and very severe. Because part of what comes along with living with pain is exhaustion. It's exhausting to be with pain. And it's not just, oh, I have a pain in my knee, or I have a pain in my neck, or I have a pain over here. Pain takes over your entire experience of your body and of your life. It pretty much moves in and invades everything. So it's very tiring. You usually, most people in pain don't sleep well, so we're sleep deprived or kind of foggy brained all the time. It's extremely difficult to participate in anything. Sometimes we get blamed for not trying harder. Actually, often we get blamed for not trying harder, for not showing up better, even though we're in pain, because we tend to try to compartmentalize pain as if pain's over here in this part of our body, and then there's the rest of us. That's people who aren't in pain. People who are in pain for a long time get that you can't do that. It's all of me as it feels like it's in pain. And so, yeah, so participating in life is very challenging.
May I ask you, though, when you're in that state, when pain is the foremost thing, I guess your tendency is to allow pain to be the director of your life.
Yeah, yeah.
That it's running the show. And I think that you have some advice about that.
Well, it does run the show for a while because you can't help but do it.
Yes.
And so what happens over time is that pain kind of feels like an invader, feels like a roommate you never wanted, feels like something dark and horrible has come into your life and into your very body. So it's easy to feel like pain is the director of your life. It's easy to feel like pain is in charge. Yes, I do talk about what I ended up working with eventually is realizing I couldn't fight it and realizing after those number of years of just putting up with it, that wasn't really healing it. It was better than fighting it because I wasn't so tense. So the pain levels went down just a little bit, but it wasn't really healing the condition. It wasn't really healing pain. I was just putting up with it. So I thought, well, there must be some other path. There must be. And you know, most of us, when we go to doctors or when we go to practitioners, we're mostly offered either, can we stop the pain, or you're just going to have to live with it, or here's some medication to help you live with it. We're not given a whole lot of other options. So I tend to always be somebody who tries to look for the other side of things, you know, or the deeper message in things. And I thought, well, how is this that that's all we've got? We can fight it or we can give up.
That either or
thing. Mm-hmm. And after those number of years, this was about 5 years of living with pain at this point, I thought, you know, I can't do this. I cannot look down my life and see that I'm going to be in this amount of pain for the rest of my life and possibly worse. I just can't. Now, I'm not talking about feeling suicidal. I'm just talking about feeling like I have to find a way out of this. And pushing isn't going to work. And fighting my way through isn't going to work. And the medical establishment doesn't have anything to offer me. Where am I going to go? So I thought, well, I have in the past used journaling for emotional pain. And I honestly, I mean, I could barely walk. So the idea of what to do was kind of ludicrous because I could hardly do anything. And I know a lot of people in pain are in that position. There isn't much they can actually physically do. But I got myself a thick pen with a really easy, you know, I could barely close my hands. So it had to be a big fat pen with felt tip. I could hardly bend my neck down at all. But I thought, I'm going to write this pain out of my body. I'm going to see if I can do that. So I would write literally like a sentence at a time, not even being able to look down at the page, just kind of scroll it across. Mm-hmm. And then I'd have this influx of pain. I'd get up and walk around. I'd go back and maybe write another. And what I wrote was my experience of living with pain. I had looked for somebody who had already written about that, couldn't find it. So I thought, well, I'm going to write my own experience, not for other people, for myself. You feel very isolated and very alone when you're in pain. It feels like, in a way, you are the only one in there with you. I mean, you are alone with your pain. That's true. On the other hand, we tend to, as you were mentioning, isolate ourselves. And because pain feels like a field around us as well as within our body. So it is a way, feels like an isolating factor. So
you're walking around in your own egg.
Your own, yes, yeah. Exactly. Your own bubble of pain, yes. In a sense. And yes. A lot of people in pain can feel people approaching them from several feet away because your pain sensors are out there because you're very sensitive. So I began to write slowly. And over a couple of years, literally, I filled a couple spiral notebooks with my ranting about pain. I talked about how awful it was. I talked about the incredible emotions that you deal with that are not spoken of very often in our culture. We don't do pain very well. And I'd like to talk about that in a little bit. But I talked about the loss and the sadness and the grief and the shame, as you mentioned earlier, and the self-blame and the blame towards others and the anger that, you know, I got this at work and my boss was still running around fine. And here I was with this disability from working. Wow, that didn't seem fair. So the unfairness and the tremendous amount of loneliness and sadness that comes with being in pain. And I just wrote and wrote and wrote. And of course, sometimes I had to stop for weeks at a time because I'd have flare-ups. But after I'd written this out, and I started also to write letters to pain. I thought I'm going to talk to pain directly. And I would write, "Dear Pain," and some of the letters are in the book.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, and they, you know, "Why are you still here? What do you want from me?" You know, just ranting. But again, to address pain as if it was a personality or a being or a force, because that's what it feels like. It feels like a force in your life. And after I had written these out, I thought, well, you know, you're going to have to read this. You're going to have to sit down and read this. That's part of the thing here. So I thought, okay. And it may sound strange, but it was a little scary to read this to myself because I had to look at how awful it had been. I had to read through my own experience. And when you're in terrible physical pain, really acute pain, it's extremely difficult to have the room to deal with the emotional pain that comes with it. It's happening, but we don't have a medical culture right now or a pain culture that actually helps us see it or work with it or allow it space. And for ourselves, we're barely getting through each day, a lot of us.
I think that there was something you mentioned in the book that really popped out at me. Mm-hmm. And that was that doctors never asked the question, how does this feel for you? And yeah. and when did it first start? Or some questions that are kind of getting at that angle.
But, well, speaking to the whole person is something I'd like to see changed. And,
yes.
And we can talk more about that in a bit. But that's true. Yeah, we're not asked about how it affects our lives. We're not asked about our experience of being in pain. It's all relegated and compartmentalized, as I was saying before, into just the physicality of it. But it goes well beyond, especially chronic pain, goes way beyond just a physical thing. It's systemic and it involves the whole person.
there are other things that just kind of attach themselves to it. And you're talking about that, all these emotional states.
Yes, and that naturally arise from it. It's natural to feel alone in pain. It's natural to feel scared. There's a lot of terror and fear that comes with being in pain.
So can pain then, I know when you're writing these letters, there's one letter where you actually have pain write or pain speak its truth. Yeah. And that's like turning the tables.
Yes. Yes. I began to work with that. Well, after I read this back to myself, I realized that something, it was difficult. I realized that I had been in a worse state than I had even known, that we don't even let ourselves feel what we're feeling when we're in terrible pain because we can barely deal with the physical aspect of it. So witnessing really important.
If we read that and we really know all this physical
It'll
pain, it's going to get worse.
Absolutely.
So we go into this denial of what we're really feeling
We
really went through.
Absolutely. And it's part of the pain paradigm, the pain culture I would like to be part of changing. We name all pain bad and we fear pain and we're not taught how to express it. And we're taught that we shouldn't express it. We shouldn't show it. So that's part of what I believe needs
away.
To change.
People don't like it when they...
Well, they're scared of it. Yeah.
If you don't get over it pretty soon, I don't know, if we feel like, oh my gosh, it's a virus and I'm going to get it too,
partly that. And we're just not taught how to work with
boring
pain.
Boring or not interesting to me, or I'm afraid that I'll be there too.
Yeah.
That's one thing that your book did for me. It gave me a lot more compassion for those people who reporting pain, and they've been reporting this pain for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I feel much more open now to be present for that and whatever it takes, for however long it takes. And that's one of the things is that... It has its own timetable.
It sure does. We try to force pain to follow our timetable, and it just won't, not all the time. Sometimes we have short-term pain and things heal on a schedule, and that's really great because we know what it is, and it's a sprained ankle or a broken bone, and we know that it's going to heal. That's usually a different kind of pain, a different kind of pain experience. It can be really intense. I'm not saying it isn't. But most of the times people know they're coming out of it and they know where they're headed. And that's a very different experience than when you're in a pain that won't leave. And it begins to kind of morph almost and spread through your whole experience and your whole body.
I'm here with Sarah Ann Shockley, and she is the author of The Pain Companion, Everyday Wisdom for Living with and Moving Beyond Chronic Pain. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, sarahannshockley.com. She spells her name S-A-R-A-H-A-N-N-E, Shockley, S-H-O-C-K-L-E-Y, sarahannshockley.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide.